Chapter 10. Harry numbly went back to work at the store and worked long hours to escape his loneliness. His only consolations were attending shul on Friday nights or Saturday mornings and eating the sugary treats which would eventually kill him. It was another year of letters and phone calls before his family returned home. The children had begged Rose since Harry's visit. They were teenagers now and not so easily placated by playing in the park near Izzy and Gladys's house or looking at the fashion magazines with their grandparents. When she got a frantic call from Seal, who said it was becoming hard to awaken Harry when he fell asleep in the chair, Rose told her to tell her husband they were coming home. The train ride east was uneventful. Abby didn't have any incidents, so Natty was able to relax and feel pure, unadulterated joy that she was going home and would soon see her father. She was anxious to get back to her friends on the block and to school. Rose was less excited about going home, but happy she'd be seeing Laura again. They'd kept in touch by mail and occasional phone calls. The two planned to go shopping as soon as the girls were back in school. The train ride home calmed Abby. She didn't like going to doctors. They always poked and prodded and asked a lot of stupid, repetitive questions. She knew by now that Natty didn't go to doctors. Abby used to think she was special because Rose took her to places she didn't take Natty. But now she was old enough to know something was wrong with her. Very wrong, and not with Natty. Abby knew she had difficulty controlling herself, but her mother was always telling her what to do and how to do it, praising her when she didn't throw a fit or pee in public. Abby used to love hearing the praise until she realized her behavior was out of the ordinary in a bad way. The thought of going back home to her old school and her old routine made her feel better. Watching the trees roll by was also soothing. She felt almost normal. Her father met them at the station. He wore an old dark brown suit jacket over a white Oxford shirt and brown trousers. His tie matched his brown fedora. Abby thought he looked like a giant chocolate bar. "He's grown a mustache," she thought. It was brown streaked with gray, sitting primly and neatly on his broad upper lip. He had an umbrella under his arm. Natty and Abby hugged him in turn, and he gave each of them a toothy smile. Abby noticed he was heavier than the year before, with a round, puffy, pale complexion. The mustache made his features look more normal than he might have looked without it. Harry put his arm around Rose as he escorted her and the girls out of the station. She didn't move away until he had to retrieve his arm to carry two of the heaviest suitcases, noticing there was more luggage than when his family left. Rose and the girls each carried one bag. He'd have to return for the rest later. It would be stored in a box under lock and key at the station until he could retrieve it. He'd splurge on a taxi to take them all home, but would make his way back to the station by trolley or bus. Harry was thrilled to see his wife and the girls again, and hopeful things would be better with Rose. During the last year, their phone calls had been inflected with tiny bits of tenderness. Harry hoped Rose was warming to the idea of reconciliation and a new start. She looked ravishing in a new rust-colored cloth coat. Her bright green eyes sparkled. Both girls seemed happy to be back. Abby was skipping along the platform, swinging her bag, with Natty following close behind. He wished he could hold on to this picture of his family to pull out and look at when times were bad. For now, he'd enjoy the moment and try not to be too anxious about the future. Harry had missed Abby's 16th and Natty's 13th birthdays. As soon as he'd known they were coming home, he'd purchased used copies of Treasure Island for Abby and the Seven Wonders of the World for Natty. If he couldn't do much else for them, at least he'd make sure they were well-read and grew up curious and inquisitive. He was looking forward to spending more time with them and erasing Bob and Max's bad influences. Since his visit to Cleveland, he tried to eliminate any barriers between him and Rose. He stopped sending money to his sister Ellen. Her husband Irving had served in World War II and had come home with minimal scarring to either his body or psyche. He was earning a good living as a bookkeeper and was taking accounting classes at night. Harry envied him for being able to serve and because he could make money doing what he loved to do. The store was still doing fairly well, so if Rose didn't want to go back to work, she needn't. He hoped that would make her happy. In fact, Rose was surprised that she felt happy, even excited to see Harry. Despite his shortcomings and his poor health, he was still a good-looking man. When he had been in Cleveland, his stay was too short and her mood too contrary to share intimacies. Her dalliances at the Casablanca Cafe were mere flirtations. She was ready to resume marital life as it was meant to be. It only enhanced her mood to see Chester Street looking lovely with all the trees in new leaf and the flowers blooming. She'd always loved Brooklyn in the spring. A few neighbors were outside tending their flowers. As the taxi dropped them at the door, she waved to Seal and Nathan. Rose walked through the front door and up the stairs to their floor, then opened the door. Standing on the threshold, Rose inhaled the air, which changed dramatically when she took in the shabby furniture in the living room and the old paint and wallpaper on the walls. She sat down on the sofa and began to sob. Her fantasy of a new start died as soon as she saw what had gradually morphed during their absence into memories of a large apartment with a fireplace and a cozy kitchen, but in reality was almost a slum. Harry sat down beside her. The girls seemed excited to be home. They raced into their room, ignoring their parents and the impending drama. "What is it, Rose? Aren't you glad to be home? It's been so long. I've missed you and the girls so much." He put his arm around her and moved in closer. She flinched, covering her reddened cheeks with her palms. "I guess I somehow hoped it would look different, nicer, better," she said, looking around. Harry slumped, took his arm from around Rose and put his hand in his lap to join his other hand already there. He sighed deeply. "What do you want from me, Rose? You go away for 3 years. You take my children with you. You rarely talk to me while you're away. I did the best I could. I've been saving what little money I make from the store for when you came home. Would you rather I'd bought new furniture?" He felt his excitement about the homecoming gradually slipping away. "It's okay, Harry. I'm just tired from the long trip," said Rose, slowly lifting herself off the couch. She picked up the lightest suitcase and started moving toward their bedroom to unpack. Rose stopped, turning toward Harry. "Why don't you go and get the rest of the luggage from the station?" Natty ran into the living room just as he got up from the couch to retrieve his hat from the wooden hall tree. "Where are you going, Daddy? We just got home. Can I go with you?" she asked, grabbing his arm as he turned toward the door. "Just go in and get the rest of the luggage, Natty. You stay here. I'll be back in a jiffy. Then we can read together before you and Abby go to bed." Before she could argue, Harry strode out the door and down the stairs, out to the front stoop and down to the corner to catch the trolley. He was despondent as he realized Rose hadn't changed at all. She was just as mercurial and materialistic as ever. How could he have expected her to change, especially after her brothers had spent 3 years indulging her? How could he have imagined he could make a fresh start with her? He'd have to refocus his sights on his relationship with the girls. They were young women now. By the time he'd retrieved the luggage, was back on the trolley and nearing home, Harry was feeling better about his situation. He had to accept Rose as she was for the sake of his children. Besides, Rose was an excellent nurse, and he hadn't been feeling well at all lately. He tried to remember to limit sugar and bread, but he found it very difficult. He loved slathering fresh butter on large rolls he got from the bakery, 2 for a penny. Several times he'd fallen asleep in his chair and awoken to find Seal standing over him, her face full of fear shaking him awake. There was numbness and tingling in his feet. They hurt, especially at night. His vision wasn't so good anymore either. He bought a pair of reading glasses at the 5 and dime, but sometimes things still appeared blurry and unfocused. That was his biggest concern. If he couldn't read, who was he? What was he? Ever since he gave up his law practice, he'd struggled with his place in the world. He was a man with a wife who didn't appreciate him and daughters whom he might never know as adults. He realized his health was poor and declining. He needed Rose to help him. He had too much to do to die anytime soon. Harry returned to the house on Chester Street, determined to be cheerful and not ruin the homecoming. He was glad to be making a little extra income from the tenants downstairs. He thought wistfully about when his parents lived in the house with them. They followed each other to the grave last year, his mother from diabetes, and his father because of all the alcohol he'd drunk over the years. He didn't have enough money to go to Baltimore to attend their funerals. Ellen's husband, Irving, offered to pay his way, but Harry didn't feel right about taking the money Irving had waited so long to have. Instead, he recited the Kaddish at Shul and would say Yisker, prayers for the dead, every year for as long as he lived. Harry turned his attention back to the present. He looked forward to reading with the girls before they went to bed. Then he would try to get Rose to tell him how Abby's most recent medical visits had gone and ask how her family in Cleveland was doing. He'd be as calm and accepting as possible to avoid an argument. He was a pragmatic man. Long ago, he'd traded his career for his self-respect, his dreams of a happy marriage just to be around a beautiful woman, and his health for pancakes. Nothing was more important than his children. If he was to spend whatever time he had left being with them, then he'd have to indulge Rose as much as he could. The next few days were relatively calm. The girls went to their old schools, although there were only 3 months left to the school year. Harry plugged away in the Army-Navy surplus store, and Rose went back to the hospital to work in the emergency room. She'd rejected Harry's offer for her to stay home. Within 8 months of arriving home, Rose had concocted a new plan for Abby, who'd been acting out more frequently. She'd been a dutiful wife for 8 months, helping Harry with his health and trying to make their marriage work, without much success in either case. Now it was time to move on, and, to assuage her own conscience, Rose assured herself that she was leaving for Abby's sake, not her own. "Harry," began Rose one evening as they prepared for bed. They had been sleeping together, but intimacy had long been abandoned because Harry was incapable due to his uncontrolled diabetes. "I think I need to take Abby back to Cleveland." She braced for his anger. Harry stopped buttoning his pajama top. His fingers no longer had the dexterity they'd once had. Now he could hardly feel them. "Why? She seems to be happy and enjoy being home. She told me she's happy to be back in school." "She's been having fits, Harry. Haven't you noticed? She's not well. Laura found some new doctors we should see. I'll leave Natty with Max and Sylvia and travel around the whole Midwest if need be." Rose had on her pink nylon nightgown and was starting to put pink plastic rollers in her hair. "You've only been home a few months, Rose, and why uproot Natty so soon? She can stay with me." "Harry," she answered, buttoning his pajama top, "you're in no shape to worry about a young girl, where she is, who she's with. You just stay here and take better care of yourself." "I have no energy to fight you, Rose, that's for sure. How will you pay for this trip? Will you work in Cleveland?" Harry knew the answer, which was that Bob or Max would pay for the trip and the apartment, but he needed to hear Rose admit it. She knew how it would make him feel. Rose was silent, which said everything Harry already knew. The next day, Rose wrote to Max in her Thursday letter, October 1947. "Dearest Max, I'm sorry to say Abby's health has declined since we left Cleveland. I'm scheduling appointments for her throughout the Midwest. Doctors here tell me I should put her in an institution. I'm appalled that anyone could suggest such a thing, especially a doctor. Harry is in no shape to watch Natty. I wonder if she could stay with you and Sylvia for a while. I won't be able to work while we're gone. I'll need to borrow money again from you and Bob. I hope you don't mind. I hope to be in Cleveland early next month. Abby and I will stay with you for a night or two before we take our trip. Love as always, Rosie. Rose, Abby, and Natty boarded the Lackawanna freight train once again. This time, Rose paid their fares using money Max had sent her. Harry accompanied them by trolley, but barely spoke. He kissed his girls, giving them each a hug before turning away. He didn't speak or touch Rose. Natty saw the tears in his eyes and longed to rush into his arms. Her parents had fought again the night before, repeating most of what they'd said before the last trip to Cleveland. Rose had told him that a Cleveland doctor had advised her to institutionalize Abby. Her father had said, "Maybe that would do her good. These people are professionals. Maybe they can help her. It's preferable to dragging her all around the country and disrupting Natty's life all over again." Mother had yelled back, "Put your own daughter away in some loony bin? I've been to those places when I was in training. They're horrible. How could you suggest such a thing? Really, Harry, I didn't think you could be so cruel. She's our child." The trees were still dropping their leaves. Their beauty seemed incongruous to what was happening, like a stage set for a romantic autumn scene whose main characters were ready to kill each other. "What? I can't believe what I'm hearing. I really don't know why I married you in the first place. You've let yourself go to pot, you're sick, and won't do anything about it. That's the least you could do. How can you be of any use to us if you're sick or dead?" Both fell silent. Rose gathered her skirt and sat on a bench in the messy garden. She turned away from Harry, who paced back and forth with suppressed rage and energy, kicking twigs and dead leaves from side to side as he walked. She rose from the bench, straightened her hemline, smoothed her hair, and licked her lips, which were still remarkably fresh from her last lipstick application that afternoon. She waited for Harry to stop pacing and touched his arm. She gently ran her fingers up and down it and then grabbed his hand in hers. She turned to face him. "Harry," she whispered, "you know I didn't mean any of that. I know you love me and the girls. We love you too. But I have to do this. Trust me, I'm a nurse. Abby is ill and needs help, not institutionalization or shock treatments. She needs a doctor who can appreciate how special she is and give her good care. I need to find that person if it's the last thing I do. Natty will be in good hands. My family loves her. We won't be gone as long this time. I promise." Harry raised his head to look at and through her. He saw a woman who had traded on her beauty her entire life. He felt terrible and was sick of her games and machinations. Silently, he dropped her hand and began to walk down the alley. Rose called after him with no response. He returned after she and the girls had gone to sleep. The 8-hour train trip to Cleveland was boring, with no one interesting to watch. There was nothing new about the scenery. Neither Natty nor Abby could convince themselves this was an adventure, despite Rose's efforts to get them excited about the trip. Natty tried to sleep when she could and read when she couldn't. Rose brought snacks, but Natty ate sparingly. She felt nauseous thinking of going back to Cleveland, leaving friends with whom she had only recently reconnected. She was in despair, powerless to change her situation. She liked Uncle Max and Aunt Sylvia about as much as she liked Uncle Bob and Aunt Sadie. At least she already knew the teachers in the school, but anticipated a new round of teasing with dread. Throughout the trip, Abby sat stiffly with clenched fists and a flat expression. Her demeanor changed only when Rose brought out the food. Then she stuffed it into her mouth as quickly as possible before going back to sitting almost immobile until they arrived in Cleveland. She was tired of visiting doctors and being paraded around like a circus animal that was unable to perform as expected. Abby craved attention, especially from Mother, but only when they were at home or with people Abby knew. Otherwise, all the attention had begun to embarrass her. She refused to answer Mother's questions or comment on the scenery. She felt betrayed and trapped. She wanted to hit everyone on the train and run out of the car. The only way to control herself was to sit tightly, as if she had an invisible rope tying her to the seat. She hadn't even gone to the tiny bathroom, despite Rose's coaxing. Abby was afraid she would jump off the train. Abby saw Uncle Bob and Aunt Sadie through the train window. Uncle Bob was dressed to the nines with gold rings that flashed in the sun on each ring finger. Aunt Sadie looked shiny in a light blue dress and fox fur. It was October and cool. Abby didn't have a winter coat. She and Natty wore several layers of sweaters instead. Abby wondered why people thought a fox head biting its tail wrapped around a woman's shoulders was considered fashionable. She didn't like the idea of wearing a dead animal. It made her think of death, sometimes her own. Abby watched Uncle Bob tip the porter as he placed the bags in his shiny black sedan. Her mother sat between Uncle Bob and his wife, prompting a dirty look from Aunt Sadie. The girls got in the back. Abby finally loosened her rigid posture and started to relax. She grabbed Natty's hand across the seat and gave it a squeeze. Then, as quickly as she had grabbed it, Abby released Natty's hand, as if the gesture never happened. She wanted to show Natty they were in this together, even if they didn't get along so well. Uncle Bob brought them to their grandparents' apartment, where Uncle Max, Aunt Sylvia, Uncle Izzy, and Aunt Gladys were preparing food. Several tables had been placed next to each other to stretch across the apartment. Grandma brought a shining brisket trimmed with carrots and potatoes to the center. Abby knew she was using her best china brought from the old country. Everyone drank a toast. Her mother even allowed Abby half a glass of wine. It seemed to loosen her up and gave her the confidence to tell jokes she'd heard in school. She felt very grown up. She watched Natty wolf down her meal. They both loved Grandma's cooking. Grandpa Sam teased Abby good-naturedly until she couldn't stop laughing. She felt happier than on the train. Abby and her mother stayed with Uncle Max and Aunt Sylvia for 2 days. On the third day, they said goodbye to Natty before she left for school. Mother gave Natty a distracted hug and kiss on the cheek, telling her they'd return soon. Abby hugged Natty, whispering before she let go, "I hid a snake in this apartment. I bet you can't find it." Natty froze. Rose and Abby left, each carrying a handbag. Max would take them to the station. Their other bags were in the car. Grandma Gazella came by to take her to her first day back at school. She put an arm around Natty's shoulder. Natty turned her face into Grandma's ample bosom to cry. "Come on, Bubala, time to go to school," Grandma murmured in a Yiddish accent. "Today I make you some nice sponge cake for when you get home after school." She used a clean white hanky with embroidered flowers to dry Natty's eyes, while Aunt Sylvia handed her the satchel holding her books. "You come to my house after school for some nice sponge cake, yes?" said Grandma. Natty nodded, drying her eyes with her grandmother's hanky. She didn't know how she'd get through the day or the coming weeks. It was all too much. They walked to school. Grandma, with sensitivity Natty would never forget, dropped Natty's hand as they approached the school, waving goodbye without making a fuss. Natty realized Abby was just trying to upset her by whispering about a snake, but it still terrified her to think Abby might have actually hidden one somewhere in the apartment. Natty tried to calm herself as she walked down the hall to her classroom. She thought of Grandma's sponge cake and how she would get through the day. While dressing that morning, she'd worried about her worn, overwashed hand-me-down dress and shoes that would give the kids at school more to tease her about. To compensate, she brushed her long black hair until it shone, pulling part of it back in the style her mother called Alice in Wonderland after the storybook character. Natty tied a bright blue ribbon Grandma had given her around the section of her hair she'd pulled back over the top of her head. She'd borrowed an extra sweater from Aunt Sylvia to combat the autumn chill. The sweater was too large for her. Grandma had promised to knit one just for Natty as soon as she had the chance. Aunt Sylvia had been kind the night they'd arrived, telling Natty in private they would go shopping and get Natty some new clothes. Natty planned to look in Grandma's fashion magazines to see what everyone was wearing and what she might buy. Now Natty worried there actually was a snake somewhere in the apartment. Logically, she knew there was nowhere Abby could have found a snake. They weren't living in a desert. Maybe Abby went to a pet store in Uncle Max's neighborhood. But if she did, where could she have kept the snake? And how come Mother, Uncle Max, and Aunt Sylvia didn't say anything about it? She's just trying to scare me, Natty thought. She was upset nonetheless and tried not to cry. The worst thing was to show up in class looking like he'd been crying. She hoped the kids would call her Brooklyn again and let her settle in without any fuss. In the classroom, Natty glanced around the room to see if she recognized anyone. She had a new teacher who didn't know Natty from before. There were some kids from when she was last in Cleveland. They waved and smiled. As she glanced around the room, Natty spotted another girl, blonde, blue-eyed, and as beautiful as a movie star. She forgot to think about her situation, her old clothes, or the snake that might be lurking in the apartment. Natty and the movie star were introduced to the class. The teacher said the girl's name was Kathy and was also new. Kathy was tall and thin with beautiful clothes. Natty tried to memorize them so she could discuss them with her grandmother later. In the locker room just before gym class, Natty, Kathy, and the other girls changed into their dark blue gym suits. Natty's was a hand-me-down from one of her cousins. The gym suit was one piece with a collar and buttons down the front. It was attached to shorts that extended to the knee. A slim cotton belt went around the waist. Natty's cousin was slimmer than Natty, so the suit was a bit tight. At 14, Natty had become curvy with mature breasts and wide hips. Her hourglass figure was fashionable, even if her clothes were not. Natty and the other girls watched Kathy. They always looked at each other to see who needed a bra and how big it was, who looked like a woman and who still looked like a girl, and who was wearing a sanitary belt visible over the top of their panties. They looked at Kathy as much for flaws as for attributes. Kathy took her time getting changed, unconcerned about her audience. She seemed happy, unaffected, and kind. She smiled and nodded at Natty, who badly needed a best friend. The girls trooped into the gym, lining up to do the chicken dance and jumping jacks. Afterwards, the girls were told to run around the gym as many times as they could until the class period ended. Natty was slow. She hated running and didn't want to sweat too much and have to shower in the locker room. She was self-conscious. Kathy was way ahead of Natty, running on the track like a gazelle. She's so slim and graceful, Natty thought. On her second rotation, Kathy slowed to run beside Natty. "Hi, I'm Kathy. I guess we're the new girls," Kathy puffed, slightly out of breath. Natty was startled. "Why is this girl speaking to me? I'm a nothing." Natty stumbled, almost falling, until Kathy caught her elbow. "I didn't mean to startle you. Sorry," said Kathy. "Thanks. I'm Natalie, but everyone calls me Natty." "Nice to meet you," replied Natty, trying to keep pace with Kathy. "I'm new again. I was here for a few years, but went back to Brooklyn for a few months. That's where I live, Brooklyn." "Yeah, that's why we call her Brooklyn. Listen to her talk," said another girl passing by. "I'm from Wisconsin. My mother moved us out here because he started a new job," said Kathy. Natty nodded and smiled, too out of breath to say anything more. Kathy called out, "Nice meeting you, Natty," as she picked up speed and ran ahead. Soon the gym teacher called time, telling the girls to go back to the locker room and get ready for class. The other girls crowded around Kathy as they all showered and dressed. Natty used a towel to wipe off the sweat before putting her clothes back on. She stole glances at Kathy as the girls swarmed around her, thinking, "She's clearly not a Jewish girl with those looks and that name." Remembering Mona back on Chester Street, Natty wondered if Kathy's parents would let them be friends. Natty was very conscious of her Jewishness. That was all she'd ever known. Most of the kids in her Brooklyn school and neighborhood were Jewish. Her father took the girls to shul, sometimes on Friday evenings or Saturday mornings when they were home and their mother didn't have errands for them to do. Her mother was not religious. Nattie enjoyed listening to the canter and seeing some friends she knew from the neighborhood. After Abby had an incident in the synagogue, peeing on the floor during the Torah reading, she stayed home with their mother, which was probably Abby's intention all along, thought Nattie. Nattie continued to go with her father when he felt well enough. Sometimes he went alone, wearing his yarmulke and praying shawl, davening with the other men.